Welcome to Third Tuesday Conversation, a monthly podcast that focuses on the ministry of faith formation with children, youth, and families in ELCA congregations. Our goal is to engage in conversations that strengthen and empower your ministry world. This podcast is produced by the ELCA Youth Ministry Network. I'm Adam Butler.
I'm Elizabeth Pedersen.
And I'm Danica Olson. Welcome, everybody. It's March. March Madness. Right around the corner. Oh, so excited.
I love March Madness.
Me too. Adam, do you know about Elizabeth and I in March Madness? What happens?
I think you've told me about it before.
I'm sure we've talked about it on the podcast.
Yeah, we're not going to be able to do it this year.
I know.
Is this like you guys skip out on work and...
Well, no, because we have Fridays off.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so the first Friday of the tournament, we usually go to Chili's. Not usually. Yeah. We always go to Chili's.
Always only.
And we've done it so many times that now when we walk in, they just hand us all the remotes.
And sweet.
It's so awesome.
Well, not anymore. Like now there's new people working there. Called old one time and it was really...
The last couple years have been a little rough on our tradition, but...
Yeah.
Nice.
It's a real good thing. But now Elizabeth's going to be gone this year. So,
wow.
You know.
How's that for killing tradition?
Right?
I know. It's, yep. Yeah, right.
5 years ago, I was like just about to have a baby the next day and I still did it.
Yep.
Wow.
That's how deep this tradition
is. Dedication.
Goes. It's dedication.
Wow. Yeah. I love it.
So much yep. fun.
Briggs was literally born the next day.
Yep. Anyway.
All right. We digress. March.
We can keep talking about March Madness. I love it.
Could be a March Madness podcast. I don't care. Why not?
What are we looking at? Tuning in to K-Fan.
Yeah.
Okay.
My wife just picked I don't actually know how to pronounce it. So like if you're out there and you live near this college, I'm sorry. Kennesaw State. They just made the tournament for the first time ever, I think. And they're the Owls, and their mascot is named Scrappy. And my wife just claimed them as her team for the tournament. She always picked some random one, but she's like scary right too. She picked I told her, what are you doing picking a 16 seed to go as far as you did? And she picked the UMBC Retrievers that year.
Oh my gosh.
Last year she picked St. Peter's. I mean, she's just a savant.
Wow.
So, 1 year I filled up, this is a side note and really dumb, but I filled up my bracket like just because I wanted to see. But the matchup of where I'd rather go on vacation. Hmm. And it actually did pretty well.
Interesting.
1 year I filled one out based on which colors I liked of, you know, the team. Anyway,
cool.
Those were not the years that I won, by the way, but I have won in our bracket pool, I think twice.
Good for you.
And it's a lot of people.
I always get really mad when you win.
Pretty fun.
Surprise, surprise.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Even though your bracket is broken, you are still beloved.
Wow.
How's that for a segue? Today, I am bringing to the pod squad a theme. Our Lenten theme at my church is called Broken and Beloved. And it has captured my attention. And I'm just so pumped to have a conversation about it. So that's what we're talking about. Lenten 2023 conversation is being broken and beloved. And I think it's important, well, maybe not important, but I'm going to tell you anyway, of kind of where we're coming from when we talk about this. There's a campus pastor named Sammy Rhodes, and she said, two of the greatest fears in life come from the questions we often ask ourselves, but rarely say out loud. Am I okay? And do you love me? The answer that the gospel gives us is both surprising and what we need to hear. No, you are not okay. And yes, I love you. So that's what I want to talk about, because I really feel like, especially in youth ministry right now, our kids are walking around feeling so broken and they want to know, like, am I okay? And am I enough? And I don't think it's just teenagers, frankly. I think this is a human question, but it is landing in ways that we, I mean, right, the Holy Spirit is actually at work, but landing in ways that we couldn't have imagined. So I mean, we haven't talked about this, so I'm curious to know your like immediate reactions of what does it mean to be broken and beloved? Is that the right order? Is it beloved and broken? Give me your thoughts.
I've got a post-it note on my bulletin board next to my my desk that says, I'm not okay, you're not okay, and that's okay. And I don't know where it comes from. A quick little Google says it comes from Elizabeth Kubler-Ross. So maybe that's where it comes from. I heard it one time randomly and I was like, that's perfect, because I think I've always really appreciated that, because it humbles me at the same time as it reminds me of like the humanity of all of this, that like, especially in ministry, that we can get like wrapped up in trying to be perfect or doing things the best that we can, and like kind of performance-based behavior, mm-hmm. where what we really should be living into and embracing is that we're like, none of us are okay, and that's okay. And then what you're saying here with the broken and beloved is that the kind of the answer to the why of that phrase, right? Which is, I'm not okay and you're not okay and that's okay. Why is that okay? Well, because you're beloved, and like, you don't have to do anything to earn that. Drawing back to the enoughness piece that we just got out of with the extravaganza, which is just that, like, that angle of being enough. That's what beloved means to me, is that there's just something about inherent about me that I can't control, and that is good. And that's comforting to me, even when I feel like I'm not okay and that's not okay.
For our Lenten worships this year, we're doing spiritual practices around the theme of making decisions. And so it's about like holy listening and how we navigate or even find the courage to ask ourselves questions that might be unsettled in us, and then how we make decisions as a part of that. And so I was talking with one of our pastors about the first service that we had last week, because it was a lot of contemplative listening in silence. And, you know, that is a big thing to ask people to do in a worship space, you know, like that can be uncomfortable. And we were talking about how important that work is, and how, you know, we as church, and we think about what we're trying to do in this world, in our communities. Like, I just think that if we can invite people into the bravery of seeing ourselves, like fully seeing ourselves and being aware of the brokenness that we all hold and have, and then help people to find a way to peace within that, like that, it like that just feels like such a worthwhile way to move about this ministry things, like to help people to come up against their humanity and then hear the message, you are okay, it is okay. That's just, and that's so, and that is a big thing that, you know, I'm a lead part of our confirmation program, and like that is just something I just hope and pray that we're getting through in some way, shape, or form to our young people who are going through our confirmation program. This last week we wrapped up a unit on big ideas or big questions, that why do bad things happen to good people, what is God's plan for my life, how does God answer prayers, those kinds of things. And so this wrap-up lesson was dealing with uncertainty, because honestly, like that's what this is. Like we have, if we're going to be people of faith, we have to find our way to being okay with not having all the answers and not knowing, and that liminal space that really life is all about. So I had a panel of people come in and share about their own experiences with uncertainty in their life, and like how they moved through those and how their faith helped them and what they learned, and It was so beautiful. And it was clear, like you said, you know, we will always grapple with this thing. Like it's going to be a thing forever. Like something, it's a lifelong journey of coming up against our brokenness and then finding our way through it, that we never quite figure it out, which I mean, I guess is a bummer, but also true. So anyway, those are the things that were connecting with me.
We've on our Wednesday services, we're inviting people from our community to talk from their own experience about being broken and beloved. And last week we had a gentleman talking about growing up in an abusive home, and our young people go to worship during Lent. We don't have regular confirmation during Lent. And I think it's so powerful for young people, but for everybody, to hear from people's real experiences about how what they've gone through has shaped them, but also how it has helped them to understand their own belovedness outside of some big things. And some of the interview sermons are, you know, like, for example, last week was a big example of growing up in an abusive home, right? They're not all that dramatic, but also like when he could look our young people in the eye and say, like, if this is your experience, I'm really sorry. And also it doesn't define you. Like there's a God who calls you beloved, and that like we can speak that enoughness and that belovedness into each other, I think is a muscle that we have to exercise. I think we're so used to pointing out the brokenness in others in order to make our own brokenness feel less painful or less scary or whatever. But if we were in the practice of reminding people of their belovedness and their enoughness and their okayness, how transformative that might be for someone's life.
Yeah, I think the necessity is there for those two things. Why I like those two things being paired together, the brokenness and the belovedness, is that you're right in saying that we do spend a fair amount of our time pointing out brokenness in others or deciding what is broken in someone else. But I'm in some ways less, it's not probably, I shouldn't say I'm less interested in it, but like, I do think that I just wish that people were better at admitting their own brokenness, because I don't think that belovedness lands unless you're willing to admit that piece of it, right? That there isn't a way for you to understand what belovedness means without saying, I am broken. Mm. And especially, this is one place where, especially as a man, I wish that men were better at admitting their brokenness. And even so, like reflecting about on my own ability to do that, I'm probably more capable of doing it because I have this built into me, like as a pastor and as a ministry leader, and like I'm willing to go there more frequently, but also like I'm really crappy at saying I'm broken or admitting that like there's something wrong with me, or opening myself up to someone seeing my brokenness. And so from the male perspective, the culture that has been just beaten into me that like you're tough, you don't admit it, you don't show it, because if you do, you're weak, and weakness is bad, and all these sorts of things. I don't think that I hear belovedness in the same way that someone who's more able to open up like that can. And so I just I think in this mental health conversation that we're having since COVID, like thankfully more out in the open and more pointedly within that, I think there is some more attention going to this like kind of gross manlyhood of don't admit you're broken, don't show weakness. Going back to what you were saying, Danica, about like hearing belovedness and being like what people need to hear, like we have to be able to admit to our brokenness or to acknowledge our brokenness to hear the belovedness. And I just think about all of my all of my peers who are unable to hear that belovedness in the way that I wish that they would, because they're too busy trying to make sure that nobody sees their flaws. And I'm not saying that's an only male experience. I'm just sensitive to that because I know that that's drilled into the culture. And I know that it's just inherent in who I am, that I just like have that piece of me. And I wish that I didn't. And I wish that more people around me didn't also.
I have this theory about life that I have been working for some years, you know, and it is that it's not that I'm trying to figure out if it's true, you know, and it is that it's only through big, hard life experiences that we can learn some essential truth about God and the world and life. And I don't want to, I don't want to believe that's true, because I don't think that we should have to go through hell to learn these things. And yet that's how it worked for me, right? Mm-hmm. That like I went through hell and then realized that life in God is just so like so much bigger. Like that's how I really was able to come up against the belovedness too. Mm-hmm. That like you only make it through that when you can find peace in the beloved. And so I wonder if, like you said, that it's a muscle that we need to learn how to flex, that it doesn't have to be when we are forced down to the depths through something that we can learn this, but that there actually is a way for us to do it. I don't know. This conversation is bringing me back to
I wonder. Thank you for both of you for sharing that. I feel like it's a vulnerable thing to say. And I also think that we have a particular perspective as adults. And like the young people that we work with, like they've gone through some really big crap over the last several years. And so while we know as adults about experiences, for young people, it feels like unending or like all consuming in the sense that like, here's another thing and here's another thing. And now this, and I can't figure out my mental health challenges. And I can't figure out how to do school anymore. And I can't figure out how to be a friend or a quote unquote good kid or, you know, whatever. That like, in a life tape, I think about that, you know, like when you're really little, your life tape is super small, but then the longer you live, the longer your life tape is. And so those things feel smaller the longer you live. But when you haven't lived a super long time yet, that's really big chunks of your life tape. And so like, of course you get stuck in the brokenness spiral, because it feels like, well, that's just so much of my lived experience. So it must always be this way. Or like, you know, there's like sort of this mantra or this assumption that it's always going to be difficult, or I'm always going to, you know, fill in whatever word you want to put there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's always going to be pain.
Yeah. And like, so how important it is as our job as youth workers to show up and to insert a different story, to help them understand a different message that like, yeah, these things do suck. And let me tell you about this God guy who's always with you and who loves you more than you can ever even imagine. The hard stuff, but also the really good stuff too. And, or vice versa, you know? How important it is for adults like us to just keep hammering that message, because the world tells them something so much different every single day.
Yeah. And that's, you know, one of the pieces that we've talked about a lot on this podcast, and I know comes, you know, from your particular expertise on this, Danica, or at least just the emphasis you've given on this and the work that you've done, but the equipping parents, you know, that like, unfortunately, all too often, the world telling them differently is you know, what they get at home too, you know, mm-hmm. and like, I love my parents dearly and like have a great relationship with them. And I think sometimes I received at home a different message than that, and probably not intentionally. Well, definitely not intentionally. They weren't trying to do that, you know, sure. but like, I think there is this element of, you know, when you get disconnected from the message of belovedness here at church, and you go home or you go to school or you go to any other kind of place that isn't kind of gathered around that idea, you lose sight of that fact and then become more about like, well, keep trying harder. And if you fall down, get back up again. And these kinds of things. Or when you talk about life tape, like we're looking at ours and going, that breakup's not going to really matter to you in 20 years, you know, but when you're
it's a really big deal, when you're
18, 15. It's like the biggest thing that's ever happened to you probably. Mm-hmm. And, or there's going to come a time where that the sting of your grandparents' death isn't going to hurt as much, mm-hmm. but like, how can you hear that in the moment?
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's where equipping parents in those kinds of conversations as well, that like, that's going to be my first instinct as a pastor. I'm not going to say like, you like get over it. It's not going to hurt that bad. Right. I'm going to say like, that's brokenness and that's humanity. And that sucks. That really sucks. And like what you just said, Danica, like, and let me tell you about how God loves. And it's not good enough for today and it's not good enough for tomorrow. But at some point that love is going to hit and it's going to feel like your life's being put back together. Mm. Equipping parents for that conversation, which, I mean, I think that they're good at the unconditional love and they're good at the making sure that they're there and those kinds of things, but also just like saying some of the right words when, you know, words aren't really good enough, but being able to say like, I know this hurts really bad right now. And damn it, you know, yes. And this is, you know, this is part of being human and I'm here with you. And so yeah. is God. And I, you know, I don't know. But that was kind of where what I was wondering is like, how do you communicate this belovedness without it being just kind of an empty promise? What does it feel like? What does it look like? Because it's nice to say the words are the right words, but like, yeah. what does it look and feel like amidst the brokenness?
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. We had David Fredrickson, who's a New Testament professor here on Sunday. And he was talking about how we talk about in American Christianity specifically, about how we talk about love and belovedness and those kinds of things as like a code switch for fixing, like that there's a power differential and that like my love will, like I'm here for you and I will XYZ, or like there's some semblance or sometimes we think about love as like making something whole, and that like actually when we're talking about biblical spiritual belovedness, it's not about the fixing. It's about the coming alongside and being in the brokenness with each other, not as a way to pretend it's not that brokenness doesn't exist or to explain it away, but to say, you're broken and I'm here anyways. I'm going to stick around even in these most broken moments. And like how different that lands when you talk about love as like, oh, I love you so much and he makes me a better person, or, you know, those kinds of things, rather than like, I'll talk about this like with my spouse. I love my husband so much, and it doesn't mean that I'm about fixing him or about like his perfection. It's about, I love him because we're in it together. Like, I don't know, I am my beloved and my beloved is mine. I think that's like a song we sang in choir when I was in high school. But like,
that's good.
But that there's an understanding in belovedness that there's this journeying with, right? Yeah. That this isn't about like a God who fixes everything and who says, I'll move everything out of the way so that this doesn't hurt as much anymore. This is about a God who says, yeah, this is really broken and I'm going to stick with you in it. Because I love you that much, that even in how messy it is and how gross it feels or whatever, I'm here. I'm going to stick with, rather than I'm going to heal you. It's going to be fine. We're good. Right? So I think understanding the word belovedness, I think you put your finger on it, that like there's a deeper understanding of belovedness in relation to the cross, but also in relation to our own lived stuff. Like, we all come to understand it differently. My hope is that we all come to understand it, right? Period. But you're right. It is a little bit like, how do you even fathom what it actually means to be a beloved child of God? That's a really big question.
I think the key is that shared experience, though. I think that's what's behind belovedness, is we're all sharing an experience, and our experience of the world may be different, and people might be higher or lower on whatever sort of worldly standards or tiers we've built, those things like that. But that this collective shared experience with one another in humanity and with God in Jesus Christ as human and divine, like that kind of shared lived experience is built into what we believe. And so at the core of how we express belovedness is how we build our churches and communities and ministries and groups and whatever that is around shared experience that lives it with someone else. Even if it's not our own experience, it is shit. We're sharing each other's experience together and living in that story together.
That is the hope and the goal. And this is where this sense of desperation sets in for me, especially as a mother, that like, I am desperate to make sure my kid never feels alone in anything, in all the things that she's going through. And you know that there are young people in our ministries who we are saying all these things, and I don't know that they hear it for their specific place and time and situation and their specific person. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, that is like a, as I said, that is a piece of desperation for me, that like, how can I do this or be this in such a way that you know, that you really know that belovedness? It's just going to keep coming up. I'm very sorry. This is why I love the Enneagram, because it will help me. I'm hopeful that it will help me to have understanding and compassion enough in a big enough way to be able to, we'll just speak for my kid right now, but to be able to love her the way that she needs to be loved. Like, if I can do that, I hope I can do that. Yeah. And it's the same.
Hope so too.
Like, I could just sit here and sob about it. Like, I just want to do that. That's the one thing I want to do. And that's the one thing we want to do as a church too, is like, how do we? It's just desperation.
Yeah.
Well, it tells you how important this brokenness and belovedness thing is. Right? I mean, that's at the end of the day, that's how important it is, that it could move you to tears and crumble you and break you, and you know, you're not okay, and that's okay.
It feels appropriate to end our discussion with a blessing / poem. The poem is called "Beloved is Where We Begin." It's by Jan Richardson. If you would enter into the wilderness, do not begin without a blessing. Do not leave without hearing who you are. Beloved, named by the one who has traveled this path before you. Do not go without letting it echo in your ears. And if you find it is hard to let into your heart, do not despair. That is what this journey is for. I can't promise this blessing will free you from danger, from fear, from hunger or thirst, from the scorching of the sun or the fall of the night. But I can tell you that on this path, there will be help. I can tell you that on this way, there will be rest. I can tell you that you will know the strange graces that come to our aid only on a road such as this, that fly to meet us bearing comfort and strength, that come alongside us for no other cause than to lean themselves toward our ear and with their curious insistence, whisper our name, beloved, beloved, beloved.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for that. Okay, before we go, here are a couple of announcements for you. The network's next Oasis is coming up. It's an online event that'll happen a couple times a year. It includes 90 minutes of learning and conversation. The next one is Thursday, April 27th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern. The teaching guest is Reverend Dr. Chuck Hunt, who is an insightful and dynamic teacher. The best part is, if you have a network paid membership, Oasis is free. And for non-network members or basic network members, the cost is only $25. Get more info and register at elcayamnet.org/oasis. Thanks so much to all of you who are members of the network. Your membership makes things like Third Tuesday Conversation, our mobile app and Connect Journal, and Extravaganza, and so much more possible. Thanks so much for listening. New podcasts will be released on the third Tuesday of every month. Be sure to subscribe so you receive them as they come out and share with your friends. And finally, thanks to Paul Amlin, the 3TC producer, for his work. Have a great week. Bye.
Bye.